If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning. Dave Patton here, sitting in for Bill Carnes on the 2A Radio Show. Nice to be back. It was good to have a little bit of a break there. I got to listen to Bill's show he did on Thursday. I got to listen to it yesterday. And I did take the Handgun Combat Master Test. I did take the class. And it was a big eye-opener. I've taken this to be the third time that I'd taken the class out at Front Sight, and I took it once. Well, I took the test procedure from Chuck Taylor. And it was quite a process. Enjoyed it. A lot of parts of it I really enjoyed. And let's see, what else happened these last couple of 4 days? The wife took the grandson out to Searchlight to see what was going on at the Tea Party rally, and he got to meet the governor. The wife just happened to walk by the governor's motorhome. He called him over, and she got to hang out with Jim Gibbons for a little while and got to have the grandson meet the governor. That was pretty good. Got a few pictures. They said it was really windy out there, and they got up to hear Sarah Palin speak, and it was pretty hard to do. I guess the sound system with the wind and the feedback of the mic, so they couldn't really hear what she had to say, but at least they got to be out there and be part of the experience. The wife said that the line of cars coming into Searchlight was 20 miles long at least, and both directions, so that's 40 miles of cars. So it was quite large, quite a history making project. And if you were out there, I'm sure you didn't see it covered like it probably should have been in different news medias. It was quite large compared to what most of the press says it is. They also had Sue Loudon was out there. I went to her website and I got to see a little blurb of her speaking on YouTube, or the video was on YouTube, and it seemed like there was a ton of people out there, guys. I mean, it was huge. So you want to kind of get an idea of what it looked like, you can, if you go to Sue Loudon's website, there's a link over, and they did a pretty good job of it. And I'll talk to you a little bit about the Handgun Combat Master Test and my take and the kind of the different things you need to be aware of and the different things you need to know if you want to pursue this test. So stay tuned through the breaks. Good to be back. We'll be talking to you in a few minutes.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. Dave Patton here on the 2A Radio Show, sitting in for Bill Carnes. So we were talking a little bit about the Handgun Combat Master Test. This test is 400 points. It's 80 rounds. You have to shoot 80 shots. And what the way they work this is they start you out with a zero. And every time you have a procedural or miss a shot or get a peripheral, then they add points to your score. So the best attainable score is a zero. Now, if you have enough points added up, once you break 40, you're out of the running. You have to have a 90%. So you have to have at least under 40 to pass the test. So how did I do? Well, not too bad. The first test, I shot a 91. That's kind of respectable. It's not real good. Of course, you want to get down into the 60s, and then you're within a couple of shots, you know, when you're taking the test of breaking the 40 mark, or staying under 40, I should say. Now, Chuck Taylor, when I talked to him and I took the test from him, he told me this was the holy grail of tests, and he wanted to make sure that not just anyone could pass it. And boy, did he ever make a test that's difficult, considering I think there's Justin's 43, and I think he's the last one to pass it. So that's 43 people that have passed it since Chuck Taylor implemented it. And I think there is 14 or 15 that have passed the test out at Frontsight. So the way that Chuck set this up is he wanted it to be you to use a duty rig. In other words, he didn't want you to have the high-speed weapon or the high-speed holsters like they use for IPSC. So it's a normal duty rig, and it has to be at least a level 1 retention holster, which means, and this is the way he'll usually check it, is, of course, your gun will be unloaded. It's in the holster. You take your holster off and tip the holster upside down, and the holster needs to retain your weapon. You give it a little shake, and if the holster stays in the if the gun stays in the holster, you're good to go. If it's not, if it won't stay in there, you're going to have to put a little more retention on it, screw the screws down a little tighter, or whatever it takes to keep the weapon from falling out of the holster. Which Chuck told me he designed it that way specifically for a duty rig. If you're rolling around on the ground or whatever happens to you, you don't want your gun falling out. And it's the same way for your magazine pouches. So you have to have them tight enough that you can't just grab a mag and yank it out. There again, also, you have to be able to take the magazine pouch off your belt with fully loaded mags in it, tip it upside down, give it a little shake, and make sure that they don't fall out. Now you're good to go on your duty gear. And then, of course, there's positions where the equipment has to be located on your body. You cannot have a thigh rig. It has to be a duty rig on your belt. It has to be at the point of your hip, or as Bill used to say, at the seam of your pants. The center of the seam is where your holster and your mags have to be. Nothing forward. Now, you can have extra mags if you want to, but they have to go around behind your back. So it is pretty much taken from the standpoint of duty rig. You cannot have any compensated weapons, meaning so that you can have a quicker recovery. You can't have any high speed features on the weapons. It has to be pretty much stock from the factory. You can, of course, you could have a trigger job, but that is not considered, you know, a big alteration like on the outside of the gun. In other words, you don't want to have a magazine well that's fluted and opened up so that it's really easy for you to get the mag in. You can't have the compensated barrel, you know, with the ports in it. You can't have a ported barrel because that gives you an advantage for your follow-up shots. So when you start your test, you're at zero meters, and you fire from 0 to 50, and you shoot 16 rounds, and you start out at zero. You shoot close contact, which means you're face-to-face with the target. And the next one, you do a step back, and now these are all done from the holster, and they're all 1 second. You cannot be so close that you tear the paper when you do your close contact shot, meaning you got the weapon out in front of you. It's not supposed to be done that way. It's supposed to be done with the weapon at count three, if you will. If you know what count three is, it's pretty much the weapon is up against your ribs. So as soon as it's out of the holster and canted towards the target is when you'll take two quick shots. So you need a quick recovery, quick follow-up shot. So you take two shots each time. Now these times spread out, of course, as you go back. And when you get to the 25, I believe it's like 2.7 to take two shots, which isn't too bad. And then when you get to the 50, you get 6 seconds to take two shots. Now, I always thought about that. It's like, you know, it seems like you have forever to take these two shots. But I'm almost thinking that it was a drill that Chuck put in to kind of get into your head a little bit. Because you're coming out and you're blazing and you're shooting as fast as you can in order to make the times, two shots within this time limit. And then when it comes to the 50, you're going to blaze out and you're trying to take those shots, and you really have to have a talk with yourself, if you will, not to shoot too fast. You have plenty of time. So, of course, what happens is you'll come out, you'll shoot too fast because you've been doing it for the first 14 shots, and now you're starting to kick yourself in the butt for doing that. So it's easy to get to start second-guessing yourself and wrapping your head around it when, time will tell. There's a lot of aspects to the test that you need to practice on. I have been dry practicing my headshots from the holster, which are done at 5 and 7 yards, and it's 1.3 at the 5, and I believe it's 1.5 at the 7. You take four shots from the 5 to the head box from the holster, and you take five shots from the 7 to the head box from the holster. And I did pretty well on that. I was happy. I could hang my hat on that. I shot that down 3, which means I made all my shots and one perif. So I was pretty happy about that. Looked really good. I had a big eye-opener, though. We changed ranges a couple of times out there. I don't know what logistics were, and Justin wasn't conducting the test. We had a brand new range master, Bill, and Bill did an excellent job considering he had, like, I think there was 36 out there and 36 students, so him and one instructor. So good on you, Bill. You did a very good job. I also had a big eye-opener when the last range master came out and administered the test, how you could just by altering the way you say the cadence, the line is set, if you will. If you alter the cadence a little bit each time when you do it, you can really get a lot of people that are starting to get penalties because they're coming out of the holster. They're listening to the voice, and it was a big eye-opener to me to see how you could kind of change perspectives just by changing rangemasters, having a different voice talk to you, and the way the line would be called, where you could change your cadence a little bit each time. It was a big, big eye-opener for me. So all in all, it was a good test. It was a good test to have these different things happen so that you can kind of build your repertoire, if you will, of what you need to watch for. And we had 2 days of wind. The first 2 days were windy and cold. So most of us were all dressed up like the Michelin men. So it's kind of restrictive on your movement. And then day 3 and 4, when the tests were administered, man, the sun came out. The wind went away. It was beautiful. On the last test on Monday, I was down to my t-shirt. It was gorgeous. And of course, the guys that I train with, that I've taken the test with a few different times were out there. So it's always good to touch base and talk to each other and, you know, see how the family's doing, see what everybody's been up to. You know, keep in mind, this is not a test that you can go take every weekend. It's probably two or three times a year that you can take it. And then, of course, you have to make sure your schedule meets that schedule. So maybe once or twice a year is all you'd be able to take this test. So you got to stay pretty tuned up. And if you don't, it'll definitely show when you go out and take the test. Now, that being said, I would like to say that we all had a pretty good time visiting each other and shooting. Our first test, I think we all did really, really well. I think that there was four or five of us that broke 100, and there was one or two that I think were in the 60s. So that's my report on the Handgun Combat Master. When we come back, there'll be more right after the break. Stay tuned.
HeartDrop.com.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
And welcome back. I subscribe to a magazine. I have a few periodicals I subscribe to. This one is called Law Officer. And they have a pretty good magazine. They have some really good articles about shooting, weapons, and tactics. I really enjoy it. It's called Law Officer. They're on the web at lawofficer.com. If you want to take a quick peek at it, I like their website. Plus, I like to have a hard copy in my hand. But I was looking at it this morning, and there was a product that caught my eye, and it's a mag pouch, and it's made by Safariland. And most mag pouches put the mag sideways, if you will, so that it's flat. It's as small as it can be. Well, this is made for a duty rig, and what they do is they put the magazines sideways. In other words, the bullets would be pointing away from your side as opposed to pointing to the front, depending on how you've trained to carry your magazine. But I was just looking at that, and it seems like, you know, when you index your mag, of course you're going to rapidly go down, touch the top of the mag, bring it out. You touch the bullet with your index finger to make sure that you have a proper index on the mag. But these are, like I say, the flat of the magazine where the witness holes are would be against your side. You would come down, and you could pluck it, still having a good index. I'm looking at it as I'm talking. And I'm just thinking, this thing looks like somebody really did a good job with the thought on this. And I'm thinking maybe I'd have to be behind the learning curve a little bit because I've been presenting my magazines from the magazine pouch a certain way for 5-6 years now since I've learned this technique. But it looks like it would save a rotation on your wrist. I'm thinking I might want to try one out. Anyway, if you guys want to see something that I consider, it looks like it's new and innovative, you can look at it probably online also. And they're made by Safariland, and it's called Space Savers and Life Savers. They also do a 4-magazine, and this one I'm looking at is a 3-magazine. It says, the tension screw located between the two pouches allows for easy magazine retention adjustment, which means that would be good for Master Prep too, right, guys? Double magazine pouches and a 3-magazine pouch. I tell you what, when you're doing Master Prep, you just can't have enough magazines. Even though, like I say, they can't be in your front. They have to be around your back or in your pocket somewhere. And it looks just like this might be a good thing. All right, I went and visited a few different websites yesterday, and I found one that I'd looked at once before, and I had some time to kind of click around in it and look at it, and it's called Gun Owners of Nevada. Now, I've talked to you before about Gun Owners of America, two different organizations, of course, but Gun Owners of Nevada is a pretty good website, and I encourage you to go there and check it out. They have a lot of good articles. They have a lot of good places to go. There's a legislative action center there. There's CCW Central, Activist Toolbox, places that you should not patronize. In other words, they frown on open carry, or they frown on people that have CCWs, which is a good thing to know. This particular page I pulled up, I printed it out just because this part caught my eye. It says here, disclaimer. Now, this is on the Gun Owners of Nevada website. It says, disclaimer, we don't actually torture politicians, but we do pledge to make them miserable until your gun rights are restored. So join our action alerts today. They are free. And I encourage you to do that. Now, I found Gun Owners of Nevada probably a month or two ago when I was trying to see what Sue Loudon's stand was on the Second Amendment and gun control. I figure if I'm going to put myself behind anybody's campaign, of course I have to know what they feel about the Second Amendment. So what they did, the Gun Owners of Nevada, they sent out a questionnaire to all of the politicians that were going to run for the Senate or any other spot as far as that goes. But they sent out this questionnaire, and they asked the politicians to fill it out. And then they put that questionnaire up on their website. So I got to get a close-hand review from Gun Owners of Nevada of how Sue Loudon viewed the Second Amendment. So that's how I found them, and I encourage you to go to their website. So stay tuned through the break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. You're listening to Dave Patton on the 2A Radio Show, sitting in for Bill Carnes. And before I forget, I'd like to say hi to my good buddy Kyle. Kyle was out shooting the Masters with me this weekend, and we had a most excellent time on Sunday, didn't we, Kyle? That test rocked. The day was good. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. All right, back to Gun Owners of Nevada. When I was looking through their site, I came upon an article that really piqued my interest, because this is something that I had thought about many times, and I had what I consider my own my own interpretation of what the Founding Fathers were trying to say when they wrote the Second Amendment. First off, I want to read this. It was copyrighted in 1991 by the New Gun Week and Second Amendment Foundation. It says, informational reproduction of the entire article is hereby authorized, provided the author, the New Gun Week, and Second Amendment Foundation are credited. All right, there you go, guys. You're credited. You did a lot of work on this, and it's certainly a big eye-opener and very interesting. So it's titled, and again, guys, you can find this on Gun Owners of Nevada, their website. It's titled Literary Analysis, and it says The Unabridged Second Amendment by J. Neil Schulman. And he starts out, if you wanted to know all about the Big Bang, you'd ring up Carl Sagan, right? And if you wanted to know about desert warfare, the man to call would be Norman Schwarzkopf. No question about it. But who would you call if you wanted the top expert on American usage to tell you the meaning of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution? This was a question I asked of A.C. Brokey, editorial coordinator of the Los Angeles Unified School District and formerly senior editor of the Houghton Mifflin Publishers, who himself had been recommended to me as the foremost expert on English usage in the Los Angeles school system. Mr. Brockie told me to get in touch with Roy Cooperund, a retired professor of journalism at the University of Southern California and the author of American Usage and Style, The Consensus. So I will continue on with the article here, but just to give you kind of an idea of where this is going, if you look in an older dictionary that was done back in the 40s, let's say 40s or 50s, Webster's Dictionary, and you look up the term gay, all right, it was about being happy, okay, we follow that, and then the term kind of changed to mean something else, and now if you look up the term gay in a modern or a newer dictionary, I should say, there'll be a couple of different meanings to go with that. So I had always thought the part about well regulated in the Second Amendment, that maybe the founders were thinking well regulated meant like well oiled, like a well oiled machine, well regulated, as opposed to meaning how would you say that? Well imposed, well regulated, well set upon, thumb upon, regulations as in law. I always thought that they meant it was regulated as in freely moving. Like well oiled, like a machine would be well oiled. Anyway, to get on with the article, it says a little research lent support to Brockie's opinion of Professor Cooperland's expertise. Roy Cooperland was a newspaper writer on major dailies for over three decades before embarking on a distinguished 17-year career teaching journalism at USC. Of course, if you know USC, it's one of the premier colleges and the United States. So since 1952, Cooperland has been writing a column dealing with the professional aspects of journalism for Editor and Publisher, a weekly magazine focusing on the journalism field. He's on the usage panel of the American Heritage Dictionary and Merriam-Webster's Usage Dictionary. Frequently cites him as an expert. Cooperund's fifth book on usage, American Usage and Style, The Consensus, has been in continuous print from Van Nostrand Reinhold since 1981 and is the winner of the Association of American Publishers Humanities Award. That sounds like an expert to me. Well, I would agree. After a brief telephone call to the professor in which I introduced myself but did not give him any indication of why I was interested, I sent him the following letter. I'm writing to ask you for your professional opinion as an expert in English usage to analyze the text of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution and extract the intent of the text. The text of the Second Amendment is a well-regulated militia, capitalized militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, capitalized state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The debate over this amendment has been whether the first part of the sentence, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, is a restrictive clause or a subordinate clause with respect to the independent clause containing the subject of the sentence. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I've got to go back to English 101 here, don't we, guys? All right. He says, I would request that your analysis of this sentence not take into consideration issues of political impact or public policy, but be restricted entirely to the linguistic analysis of its meaning and intent. Further, since your professional analysis will likely become part of litigation regarding the consequences of the Second Amendment, I ask that whatever analysis you make be professional opinion that you'd be willing to stand behind with your reputation and even be willing to testify under oath to support if necessary. Well, he's lucky he answered it all after that, huh? All right, my letter frames several questions about the test of the Second Amendment, then concluded. I realize that I am asking you to take on a major responsibility and a task with this letter. I am doing so because as a citizen, I believe it is vitally important to extract the actual meaning of the Second Amendment. While I ask that your analysis not be affected by the political importance of its results, I ask that you do this because of that importance. Excuse me. And then the writer goes on to say, after several more letters and phone calls in which we discussed terms of his doing such an analysis, but in which we never discussed either of our opinions regarding the Second Amendment, gun control, or any other political subject, Professor Couperin sent me the following analysis into which I have inserted my questions for the sake of clarity. Professor Couperin, the words a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, contrary to the interpretation cited in your letter of July 26, 1991, constitutes a present participle rather than a clause. It is used as an adjective modifying militia, which is followed by the main clause of the sentence, subject to the right, verb, shall. To keep and bear arms is asserted as an essential for maintaining a militia. In reply to your enumerated questions, can the sentence be interpreted to grant the right to keep and bear arms solely to a well-regulated militia? Professor Couperin, the sentence does not restrict the right to keep and bear arms, nor does it state or imply possession of the right elsewhere or by others than the people. It simply makes a positive statement with respect to a right of the people. Shulman, another question. Is the right of the people to keep and bear arms granted by the words of the Second Amendment, or does the Second Amendment assume a pre-existing right of the people to keep and bear arms and merely state that such a right shall not be infringed? Professor Couperin, the right is not granted by the amendment. Its existence is assumed. There you go, guys. That's powerful stuff right there, isn't it? Its existence is assumed. The thrust of the sentence is that the right shall be preserved and violate for the sake of ensuring a militia. Schulman, next question. is the right of the people to keep and bear arms conditioned upon whether or not a well-regulated militia is, in fact, necessary to the security of a free state, and if that condition is not existing, is the statement, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, null and void? Professor Couperin's answer. No such condition is expressed or implied. The right to keep and bear arms is not said by the amendment to depend upon the existence of a militia. No condition is stated or implied as to the relation of the right to keep and bear arms and to the necessity of a well-regulated militia. It is a requisite to the security of a free state. The right to keep and bear arms is deemed unconditional by the entire sentence. Well, that's good to know, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Schulman, another question. Does the clause, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, grant a right to the government to place conditions on the right of the people to keep and bear arms, or is such right deemed unconditional by the meaning of the entire sentence? Professor Couperin. The right is assumed to exist and to be unconditional, as previously stated. It is invoked here specifically for the sake of the militia. Schulman, another question. Which of the following does the phrase well-regulated militia mean? Well-equipped, well-organized, well-drilled, well-educated, or subject to regulations of a superior authority? Now, this is the part that I had always struggled with, and I thought I had a good answer. Now, here's the professor's answer. Couperin. The phrase means subject to regulations of a superior authority. This accords with the desire of the writers for civilian control over the military. Now, that was my big wake-up right there. So, well-regulated means a superior authority. But they're saying this superior authority is in accordance with the desire of the writers, meaning our founding fathers, for civilian control over the military. Civilian control, that means us. All right. Human, next question. If at all possible, I would ask you to take account to the changed meanings of words. Now, this is the path I was down to. Take account of the changed meanings of words or usage since that sentence was written 200 years ago, but not take into account historical interpretations of the intents of the authors unless those issues can be clearly separated. Couperin. To the best of my knowledge, there has been no change in the meaning of the words or in the usage that would affect the meaning of the amendment. If it were written today, it might be put, since a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. Well, that pretty much says it right there, doesn't it? Schulman, next question. As a scientific control on this analysis, I would also appreciate if you could compare your analysis with the text of the Second Amendment to the following sentence. A well-schooled electorate being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and read books shall not be infringed. My questions for the usage analysis of this sentence would be, one, now this is Schulman asking these questions, is the grammatical structure and usage of this sentence and the way the words modify each other identical to the Second Amendment? Two, could this sentence be interpreted to restrict the right of the people to keep and read books? Only a well-educated electorate, for example, registered voters with high school diploma. Couperin, his answer. Your scientific control sentence precisely parallels the amendment in grammatical structure. There is nothing in your sentence that either indicates or implies the possibility of a restricted interpretation. Professor Couperin had only one additional comment, which he placed in his cover letter. A well-known human curiosity I made some speculative efforts to decide how the material might be used, but was unable to reach any conclusion. Excuse me. So now we have been told by one of the top experts on American usage what many knew all along. The Constitution of the United States unconditionally protects the right of the people to keep and bear arms, forbidding all governments formed under the Constitution from abridging that right. As I write this, the attempted coup against constitutional government in the Soviet Union has failed, apparently because of the will of the people on that part of the world to be free from tyranny is stronger than the old guard's desire to maintain a monopoly on the dictatorial power. Wow, guys, sounds like we're almost following in those lines ourselves. Anyway, that is called a literary analysis of the unabridged Second Amendment. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm sure most of you had thought that way all along anyway. This is Dave Patton sitting in for Bill Carnes. Stay tuned through the break, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. When the time is right.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong. Welcome back from the break, guys. This is your permanent host, Bill Carnes. I want to thank my guest host for filling in for me. I am still on hiatus, which is why you're hearing this message. I just want everybody to still remember the sound of my voice for when I come back from hiatus, and hopefully I'll be able to tell you all about the good things that happened while I was gone. I know it's a little bit of a mystery. However, due to confidentiality agreements, I need to keep it that way. So hopefully you're still getting all of the good news, commentary, and information that you're used to right here on 2A Radio. Lest we forget that the 2A Radio website has been completely redone recently, go to 2aradio.com. Look at the new format. Look at all the different things that we have up there. There's certainly more to come, especially when I get back, as well as the archives page. Within about 20 to 30 minutes after the show ends, the archive of today's show is up on 2aradio.com on the archives page. And by the end of the day, we have the description to go with it. It's all in chronological order, which is vastly different from the old way on the old site. So please check that out. Additionally, I'd like to remind everyone about the handgun shoot that we're doing. We're calling it the Shooting with Shalene Weekend Handgun Shoot. That is Shalene Nightingale, gubernatorial candidate for the state of California. Highly conservative lady with very good ideals and principles, running for the governorship, the seat being vacated by the rhino, Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're doing a two-day weekend defensive handgun course to benefit the campaign for Shalene Nightingale. You can find out all about it and sign up at nightingaleforgovernor.com. Again, that is nightingaleforgovernor.com. And Shalene's name, in case you want to Google her, is C-H-E-L-E-N-E. Nightingale, common spelling, nightingaleforgovernor.com. This is going to be an all-inclusive two-day shoot with an incredibly good rate, all of the proceeds going to benefit Shalene's campaign for governor of California. Now, with the price of the class, go to nightingaleforgovernor.com to look up all of this information. With the price of the class, you get your range fees are paid for at Burro Canyon Shooting Park, up in the Angeles National Forest outside of Azusa, California, as well as a hot lunch for both days, Saturday and Sunday. I will be the controlling range master running the overall course, and I will be joined by several of the very finest defensive handgun trainers in America today. You're not going to find a better group, more well-trained staff,
with a higher-end ability to teach and get you to understand the uses of defensive handgunning than the group coming out to this. So NightingaleForGovernor.com, check that out, and also the new website, 2aradio.com. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.